Hooked.
I'm so glad you and Master Liu could join me, Avatar,
Iwashi said, as he led their unlikely little group along the gallery of Shui Mohua Works. They came upon a forest of dagger pines, captured on unsized mulberry paper with inky flowing strokes.
The game really comes to life when playing against your peers, and there aren't many people in this world who can stand on equal footing with a Zhongdu these days. Ashuna's refused to touch a tile ever since I trounced him at the last convocation.
Though the others were loath to admit it last night at the safe house, Kavik was their best option for keeping Iwashi distracted. He'd learned the rules for Sparrow Bones while infiltrating the Janduri Association and apparently humiliated its champion within a matter of days.
He's the best player I've ever seen, Jujunta had admitted, sounding like a reluctant witness sworn to tell the unpleasant truth. If the plan requires beating Iwashi, he's your man.
Kavik didn't need to defeat Iwashi. He just needed to stall him. So far, the operation was proceeding smoothly. The invitation to a private after-business game had been procured, and the others were preparing to move on the Bliss Eternal. The ship vulnerable without the presence of her owner. The one complication they couldn't fully plan for was the fourth member of the party. The most likely scenario was that Iwashi would select the most skilled member of his retinue to match against her and Kavik. But there was no guarantee whom he'd round out the table with. Anyone present in the meeting hall after business concluded was a candidate. And that was how Yang Chen found herself walking down the hall, arm in arm, with none other than Zhongdu Chai Si. A marriage of convenience, Yang Chen thought, as they paused to admire the landscape hanging on the wall. At least Chai Si helped by playing her part well.
The Zhongdu of Janduri and the Avatar? Why, they got on famously. Hard workers both, common interests, lent each other books. I must say, Avatar,
Chai Si patted the back of Yang Chen's hand, like a convalescing grandmother, even though she was still in her 30s.
I do so admire how you've brought the Bin Ershangs in line. News reaches my ears of their unprecedented desire to serve the common good.
Her smile was as faint as the brushwork depicting the wind blowing through the tree trunks.
Why, one might almost think they were suddenly afraid of you.
People are capable of great change. You make my skin crawl. When tended to properly, the common good serves us back. Tayin and Noehi and the rest simply came to the truth. Oyuluk had the right of it. Making nice with the enemy at close range was difficult and unpleasant. The two of them were able to fill a certain amount of neutral territory with congratulations over the birth of Chai Si's baby, who waited for her back in Janduri under the care of house staff. But on every other subject, Yang Chen couldn't help but feel that all their statements were as loaded as crossbows.
You're too modest, Chai Si said.
She leaned over to examine the corner of the painting, dragging Yang Chen with her by the elbow.
What they saw was the value of quietude and compliance in...
Apologies. One moment. The Zhongdu reared back, forcing the Avatar to match her movement again.
Iwashi, Chai Si called out. You've been had. This painting's a fake.
Hmm?
Iwashi had guided Kavik farther down the hallway toward a weapons collection, as if decorative broadswords could only be truly appreciated man to man.
Bijir Mao signs her work with the cat radical, not hair,
Chai Si explained.
You and the forger might be the only two idiots in the art world who don't know that.
Iwashi sucked on his teeth and ran a hand over imaginary hair.
Doesn't matter if it's not real. People only need to think it's so. I'll sell it to a greater fool the first chance I get.
So you're keeping it forever, then, Chai Si said.
Good one. And to think I only have a few more convocations before your term ends. I don't know what I'll do without your scintillating company.
Yang Chen had never seen two Zongdus interact behind closed doors before. She found the casual banter unsettling. Not only did it completely overturn the picture she'd built of a stoic, humorless Chai Si, but watching her and Iwashi act cozy in secret rankled Yang Chen's sense of fairness. Merchant leaders always played up an image of ferocious business rivalries, a world of never-ending cutthroat competition against their peers. But Chai Si and Iwashi made the reality seem more like a backroom club, where senior enough members patted each other on the back and scoffed at the idea of fulfilling their surface-level duties. No wonder Yang Chen didn't get along with the White Lotus. She could already hear Mama Ayunarek admonishing her for bringing her emotions along.
"Don't be a child. This is how the meat gets butchered, without personal feelings coming into it. Yes, we're all playing the game against each other, but you're not supposed to take it personally."
They reached a dead end.
"Not those doors. That's my office," Iwashi said. "We'll be playing in the parlor. Better views."
He pulled on a latch and slid a screen wall to the side, revealing a sitting room that framed the ocean in large glass windows spanning from floor to ceiling. Rows of shelves held scholars' stones and miniature trees, many of the specimens pruned and trained in the cascade style, branches spilling over the edges of their containers in green waves.
"What the blazes is that?" Kavik yelped.
He pointed to the center of the room. Squatting over the floor was a large table covered in blood, rivulets of brownish-red cascading over the edges. A pattern of slaughter covered the top, as if the platform had served as an altar where dozens of victims had been sacrificed.
"Dramatic, isn't it?"
Iwashi said.
"Blood lacquer, a product exclusive to Taku, refined from the resin of itch leaf trees. Looks and smells like actual blood in liquid form, and dries to a durable coating. I told the artisan who made it to surprise me with his impulses. I think the fellow might be hiding a few dark secrets."
He glanced over at Yang Chen.
"Oh dear," he said. "I'm sorry. I understand how the goriness could be upsetting to an air nomad's sensibilities."
Yang Chen hissed into the flat of her hand. She couldn't care less about outward appearances. The table underneath the varnish had been carved from the heart of a purple rosewood. A wave of nausea coursed up her throat when she saw the growth rings peeking through the coating. Too many to count. An unfathomably old man of the foggy swamp had been cut down while still alive to make Iwashi's statement piece. Acid etched the back of Yang Chen's tongue. Something ancient threatened to burst out of her, whipped into a frenzy by the destruction of a being that would have weathered the ages had it not been for a single tiny pest whose entire lifetime barely registered as a mote of dust in comparison. Old iron. The giant spirit would understand her rage. The giant would approve if she reached out, closed her hand around Iwashi, and simply plucked him, like one would a biting insect. Kavik reared back into her, hard. Chai Si caught Yang Chen before she tripped on her robes and fell over.
"Mind your employer's presence, Master Liu," she snapped.
"Pardon." Kavik bowed deep in apology.
"I just lost my bearings for a moment."
He glanced up at Yang Chen. "I seem to be okay now." She leveled her breathing. Abbess Damola's counting patterns sped up. She squeezed back into herself and hoped the skin of Avatar Yang Chen would hold. "It was only a slip," she said. Iwashi laughed condescendingly.
"I'm glad my tastes could inspire such awe. Come, sit."
He positioned Kavik across from Yang Chen, himself and Chai Si to her right and left. Iwashi reached into a compartment and pulled out a set of standard bamboo-backed tiles, plainer than she expected.
"Before we start, the stakes," he said,
resting his elbows on the tray, his chin cupped in his hands.
"I find anything less than a silver ingot a point not worth the time spent."
Yang Chen laughed. She'd been ready to squander her entire diplomatic expense budget for this distraction, but thousands of points could change sides per round. The amount Iwashi was talking about could ruin a wealthy household in a single stroke of bad luck. "I think we might need a friendlier bet." She winked, mouth open, in an exaggerated grin. "Air Nomad. In case anyone forgot, I don't have money to my name."
"Nonsense," Iwashi said. "You control the budget of Bin Er, do you not? Just take what you need from there."
"Gambling with public funds
happens all the time,"
Iwashi finished for her.
"What do you think we were doing down in the meeting hall? We made bets on which projects would pay off and which ones wouldn't. Tell you what, I'll sweeten the deal with the greatest treasure from my collection. If you end up ahead in money won at the end of the session, you can have the extra prize on top."
He got up and walked over to a long, narrow cabinet on the wall, probably for his tree varietals that needed shade. "Again, Air Nomad," Yang Chen said. "Valuables and possessions mean little to..." Iwashi opened the wooden cover to reveal a glider staff. Her glider staff. The wings had been spread like the sides of a gutted fish, held open by pegs between the ribs. Storing it for display like that would cause damage. The paper was already warping in the humidity, creases developing in the wrong spots.
"I bought this at the Bin Er silent auction," Iwashi said. "Given how much I paid, I hope you can confirm the provenance. I seem to be a sucker for counterfeit items."
Yang Chen couldn't see the nicks and wear patterns from this distance, but she could feel them. She knew where the shine of the lacquer had been buffed away by her grip, which of the tail pins needed replacement. She hadn't gotten around to a proper maintenance session with her glider before losing it. Iwashi raised his eyebrows, expecting an answer. "That's mine, all right," she said. "Or it used to be." Kavik was halfway out of his chair and openly fuming. "Leo," she said quickly, before he ruined the plan by making a scene. "It's all right. I donated my staff to raise funds for Bin Er. And Zongdu Iwashi came by it honestly, just rather faster than I expected."
"Oh, believe me, I snapped up this beauty as swiftly as I could. Though, if it is yours, why is the name Jetson carved into the tip? Someone you know?"
Yang Chen grimaced. "The mark of the maker." Iwashi ran his thumb along the butt end, picking at the characters with his nail.
"Maybe I should send that off. I don't want people getting confused."
He glanced at Kavik, who knew about Jetson.
"My boy, if you're that mad, then all you need to do is play well. I'm offering the Avatar's staff on top of my portion of the stakes. This is your chance to give a fine present to your boss."
"Interesting," Chai Si said. "I feel compelled to match." She reached behind her neck and undid a clasp, drawing out a single black pearl on a string. Large and lustrous enough to turn the head of Mistress Noehi herself. "This specimen is the result of my first successful dive as a youth. The night abalone where I grew up would very rarely produce pearls of a unique color, but only in the island's most dangerous waters."
"Right. This mysterious home island of yours that no one's ever visited in years."
Iwashi said. He turned to Kavik, looking for an audience.
She probably cultured it from a common Zhanghui clam. I'm surprised the dye doesn't rub off on her skin.
Hold on, Yang Chen said. She was getting swept up in a pace she didn't want to maintain. She needed the game to happen, but siphoning funds from Bin Er wasn't a risk she was willing to take. People's lives depended on that money.
Avatar,
Kavik said. She followed his glance to the window, and with a great deal of consternation, realized Iwashi's ship was visible in the distance, the distinctive square banner of the Bliss Eternal fluttering in the wind. A single lull in the distraction, and that Zhongdu might remember where he really wanted to be at this hour.
With your permission, I'd like to play,
Kavik said. He leaned back in his chair and gave Yang Chen the cockiest grin she had ever seen in her life.
Trust me, by tomorrow morning, Bin Er will be richer, and you'll be soaring through the air on your glider once more. See?
Iwashi hooted.
Master Liu has the right attitude. Don't take any of this too seriously.
Despite the exhortations, one real and one fake, she was considering her options seriously. Sparrow Bones was a game of mathematics over bluffing and drama. Even though Kavik was playing the role of a suitor trying to win his date a carnival prize, he was still genuinely the best number cruncher she'd ever met. He could likely keep the game even for as long as they needed, especially with her help. Fine, Yang Chen said, exasperated the way anyone would be with an overconfident partner. Let's begin. With an expert flick of the tray, Iwashi dumped the tiles out face down. The four players reached in with both hands for the shuffle. The clack of ivory filled the room.
So,
Iwashi said,
anyone have gossip to share?
The Sawan are up to no good again, Chaisi said. Yang Chen's fists fell to the table. She took a deep breath.
What do you mean?
My sources tell me they're refortifying the old strongholds across Ma'inka. The Zhongdu of Zhongduri spoke idly, as if informing her friends that the market was short on oranges. Not for a war now, but for much later in the future. It's a very long-term play, but smart, given how they've been locked out of the highest level of Fire Nation politics. I approve.
They couldn't. The Sawan wouldn't be so bold or so stupid.
Perhaps your sources are mistaken, Yang Chen said.
No, it's true,
Iwashi said.
I sold them the stone. Good Earth Kingdom granite. For some reason, they were afraid of quarrying their home island.
Yang Chen wanted to hurl a fistful of tiles at the wall. She'd bought the spirit-stricken clan so many chances to simply live, and they couldn't. They couldn't stop striving, couldn't stop seeking advantages. Her deal with the Phoenix Eels had made the clan's social pariahs, shut-ins, and so they decided to turn their houses into citadels.
We're not breaking your rules, she could imagine Earl Lohi saying.
I'm sorry, Chaisi said. I should have advised you to leave them to their fate when you visited me in Zhongduri. You can't ask people to change. No lesson is ever truly learned except through pain.
New leaders always have too much faith in humanity, Iwashi said. I remember when I first took this job. I was very much like the young Avatar.
Don't flatter yourself, Iwashi, Chaisi said before Yang Chen could unclench her teeth. She actually works hard.
Hey,
Iwashi said with mock offense.
Despite my current reputation, I was quite active and generous early on. I was the very picture of a committed politician at first.
Forgive me for speaking out of turn, Kavik said.
My boy, you can relax. We're all equals in the game. You want to know what happened?
Kavik nodded. Iwashi began to stack tiles into the treasure pile, the distinctive pyramid shape they'd draw from throughout the round.
The problem came after I threw the city a particularly indulgent grave-tidying festival, he said. You'd swear the entire population of Taku was hungover the next morning. I went out for an early stroll, and everywhere throughout the streets, people ran up to me with smiles on their faces. They told me how much they loved the celebrations, the food, the fireworks, how much better my festival was than any of Zhongdu Wansuk's.
He caught something in Yang Chen's face she didn't realize she was giving away.
The young avatar knows where I'm going with this. She knows exactly why I became so upset.
Iwashi stopped moving to see if Yang Chen would jump in. When she didn't, he smirked.
Their praise,
he said.
The nature of their praise offended me down to my very bones. They graded me, like I was some sort of schoolboy with cake crumbs on my face. Who did they think they were, believing they had the right to judge their benefactor?
With his arms outstretched and his fingers hanging down, he looked like a caricature of a vengeful neglected ancestor coming slowly after his irresponsible progeny.
Wansuk was a good Zhongdu by every conceivable measure, but the residents of Taku were comfortable smearing his name and stamping upon his work. You should have heard the filth they said about him. Your neck would turn red.
Iwashi shook his head.
No. I glimpsed the future that day, and realized no matter how much of my spirit I poured into the job, people would talk about me in such terms. I decided then and there not to waste a mote of energy on croaking insects.
You got scared of criticism that hadn't even happened yet, Yang Chen said. That's what we do here, right? Rib each other. But the noise that was supposed to be a scoff came out of her throat like a swallow of discomfort. Iwashi smirked, as if he knew he'd struck a nerve.
Maybe, but I was right. Once the afterglow of the festival wore off, I was blamed for an increase in street pests. Turns out the citizens had littered food everywhere during the celebration. The animals had gorged on the refuse and multiplied faster.
The clacking ceased once the treasure pile was finished, making Iwashi's voice cut through the room like a knife.
Avatar, your Sawan problem isn't actually with the Sawan, the Fire Nation, or any of the nations. The true problem with the world lies deep inside humanity itself. And despite your best efforts, it will never be fixed. Mankind is a poor investment. A barren field. The less you do for it, the better.
Yang Chen spoke slowly, categorically. You are wrong, Iwashi. You are wrong, and you always will be. Iwashi glanced downward.
Well, part of you agrees with me, or else your left little finger wouldn't be twitching so.
She snatched her hand back into her sleeve before she could control herself. Wrong move. The looks from the older members of the table were full of pity. Kavik seemed excessively worried, like she might abandon her entire worldview because of a single misinterpreted tell. Iwashi could score points off her in frivolous debates all he wanted. In fact, the lengthier the better. She composed herself and turned to Chai Si. Our host presents an interesting argument about human nature, Yang Chen said. Do you have one of your own?
I believe I mentioned it already.
Chai Si helped herself to the capstone of the pyramid.
Build your hands, everyone.
Compared to mythic ancient Pai Shou, Sparrow Bones was a newborn, having sprung into the world a generation or two before Sito.
Yang Chen learned the rules herself when she was younger, not through a past life. Had her immediate predecessor ever allowed himself to indulge in frivolous pursuits, he would have enjoyed the pastime, she thought. The game embodied the current age of money quite well. In Paisho, a victory was a victory. There was no concept of by how much. But in a standard four-sided Sparrow Bones match, the winner of a round could profit off any number of losers across a wide range of points. You couldn't see your opponent's tiles. You could only infer them. Iwashi took the first draw. Yang Chen and Kavik made eye contact. Their primary strategy was still on. The two of them would exploit their numbers advantage by racing toward low-value combinations, ending rounds early with coward hands, and trade meaningless sums back and forth to stall the conclusion as long as possible.
"Feast," Iwashi said. He tipped over his rack. "Ah, oh, Master Liu, that's bad manners to keep drawing after the game is over," he said as Kavik reached for his first tile.
Iwashi was met with blank stares. He gestured at his revealed combination.
"Closed-ended stars in the darkness, worth 3,000 points. Doubled for a self-drawn completion, redoubled for going out on my first turn. That's 12,000 points, more than the 10,000 table limit. The game is over, and everyone here owes me some silver, I believe."
He snatched Chaisi's pearl and stood up from the table.
"We'll sort out the transfer of funds later. Now, if you'll excuse me, I need to head down to the docks so I can catch the last hour of favorable winds."
"Iwashi, I haven't even gone yet," Chaisi said.
"Tough. That's the beautiful thing about Sparrow Bones, isn't it? All the skill in the world can be gnawed out by a bit of luck. Just like in the real world. Look at the Avatar and Master Liu, Chaisi. They're not complaining."
A bit of luck. Iwashi had managed to land the highest scoring combination in the game in one deal. "The odds," Yang Chen whispered. "The chances of this happening were...
"Liu,"
Iwashi said.
"Tell the Avatar what the chances were."
Kavik needed a moment to find his voice. 1 in 3,744, he croaked.
So more than a bit, Iwashi said. "Anyway, the sea calls me. You're all welcome to join me on my boat."
He walked over to the window, undid the latch, and threw it open to let in the sea breeze.
"That is, unless you want to keep playing. Open stakes, no table limit this time."
Yang Chen gripped her robes at the knees, somehow already beaten into the universal posture of the debtor. The salt air stung her nostrils. They hadn't consumed enough time. Kavik stared at her, wide-eyed and waiting for orders. She'd been hustled. She was the fisherman, yanked underwater by her own line. The Zhongdu of Taku had found his greater fool. "We can continue." She and Kavik could still try their team strategy to avoid further damage. Maybe even win something back. Iwashi turned around, framed by the sea and sky.
"Very good."
He retook his seat and began shuffling the tiles.
"I don't think you have too much to worry about, Avatar. My previous win was a fluke. It's not like victories of that magnitude happen every round."
Landed.
"Feast,"
Iwashi said.
"Four gales. 1,200 points. No doublers this time, unfortunately."
Yang Chen's jaw was sore from clenching her teeth. Acting was no longer a concern here.
"How do you keep dealing into him?"
"I don't know,"
Kavik wailed. He was on the verge of tears.
"That many consecutive melds should happen only once in every 50,000 games. Ah, you see? There's your issue."
Iwashi sipped the tea a servant had brought him.
You have an over-reliance on numbers, Liu. You need to learn to read the flow. Luck is a fickle guest. Though plenty of rational men and women may deny it, the tides of fortune are a very real force.
He gestured at Yang Chen with his little finger. The rest held his cup.
Much like the spirits.
Curse this game, Yang Chen thought.
Curse this game and its stupid names for countless winning combinations that found their ways into Awashi's hands over and over.
The Zhongdu of Taku had preyed upon Kavik especially, scoring hit after direct hit upon her so-called expert. Both Yang Chen's and Kavik's losses came at the expense of Bin Er. They couldn't continue like this, or else the city would become a silent Tianhai Shi, its residents sucked dry by the debts she'd signed on their behalf. Yang Chen drew her hands over her face, using the motion to peer at Chai Si. The Zhongdu of Zhuanduri, who'd somehow managed to remain relatively break-even throughout the carnage, caught her looking and shrugged.
Leave me out of this, her frown seemed to say.
Pity from her worst enemy. Yang Chen would rather be locked in a staring contest with Tapa.
Can we take a short break?
Kavik pleaded. He mopped his brow.
Just for a few minutes. But of course,
Iwashi said. Kavik got up and stumbled to the sliding door, not the window. The wrong way if he needed air. He nearly pulled the frame out of its slot, amusing Iwashi rather than angering him, and lurched down the hall.
Excuse me,
Yang Chen withdrew from the table, more chuckles from her host, and chased after her partner. She caught up to Kavik around the bend of the art gallery where he leaned against the wall. Maybe he was sick. That would have explained his disaster of a performance.
What is going on? Can they hear us?
The hall was empty, but just to be sure, Yang Chen spun the air around them. The indoor version of the trick she'd used with Chief Oyuluk was less effective, but would have to do. The window Iwashi had opened was her cover. Kavik straightened and turned around. The sheen of panic on his face was nowhere to be found. Other than the sweat beating on his skin, he was as calm as could be.
Iwashi's cheating, he said.
Yang Chen opened her mouth to shout, but nothing came forth. She was caught somewhere between complete surprise and disgust with herself for not considering the possibility.
He's cheating, Kavik repeated. He's elbow leeching, edge reading, wall gliding, every dirty trick in the book.
Sleight of hand? That's simple. I would have seen him. Kavik gave her a quizzical look. No, she reflected. I've been distracted. The table, her glider, Chai Si's presence. Iwashi had fooled her. Kavik skipped the opportunity to call her out on it.
He was only testing the waters at first, he said. I wanted him to think he could keep getting away with it. When we go back in there, I need your help to re-raise the stakes as high as we can.
Are you kidding? Yang Chen shouted under her breath. If he's been cheating the whole time, that's our chance to catch him in the act so we can annul our losses.
Getting caught isn't gonna faze him,
Kavik set his jaw.
Iwashi is a hypocrite and a bully. He was never interested in a fair game or a test of skill. He just likes to hurt people. He can't handle a real battle where he faces losing.
Kavik took Yang Chen's hand.
I've said I hated Bin Er in the past, and maybe that's still true. But it's my city whether I like it or not, and I'm not going to let its people be robbed by a thief who doesn't even need the money. Didn't you tell me once that we have to fight for complete strangers as hard as we do for our friends?
It wasn't like him to make grand gestures. Yang Chen half-heartedly tried to pull her arm back, but his grip remained firm. Kavik gently spread her fingers and put them on his neck, over his pulse. His heartbeat was as slow and steady as the changing of the seasons. He moved closer.
Have faith in me,
he said, staring into her eyes so she could see his pupils.
I can beat him.
He was telling the truth. Or at least, he believed so with all his heart. Yang Chen grunted and looked away.
Your skin is clammy.
I know. I had to wait for that, too. They made sure to start and hide their argument well before re-entering the parlor.
You had to show off, didn't you? Had to look like a big man and get my glider back.
Well, excuse me for trying to defend your honor.
An embarrassed couple would speak in whispers, so they kept their voices low.
Yang Chen found it ironic how their fake quarrel had nearly the exact same content as their real one.
It was just a run of bad luck. I can come back from this with a few hands. Please, I'm begging you. The treasures Chief Ouyaluk gave you, those are easily worth at least 5 more rounds.
The best answer here was no answer. Yang Chen slid the door open again, signaling the end of the protest. A sullen hangdog pair they made.
My friends, I don't think we can play any further, Yang Chen said through her forced grin.
She remained standing at the threshold as if she wanted to bolt right now.
Consider this our declaration of surrender.
A high-risk trap. If Iwashi acquiesced and sent them on their way, they'd be utterly sunk.
I can give you credit, he said. I'm sure you're good for it.
Kavik began to speak, but Yang Chen elbowed him in the side.
Thank you very much, but no. The temple elders always warned us not to gamble. I think this has been the perfect cautionary tale.
What if I paid out gold to your silver?
Iwashi said. The surprise that followed was genuine. They'd wanted to raise the stakes, but neither of them had considered Iwashi would go so far.
He's not putting himself at risk in his mind, Yang Chen thought. He latched on to his opponent's hope and wants to inflict more pain.
Thanks to her earlier lapse, the Zongdus knew what Yang Chen looked like when she froze. She did her best to give them another show. In contrast, Kavik acted as quickly as a drowning man reaching for driftwood.
Yes, he said. Yes, your sportsmanship is appreciated.
He raced back to his seat and motioned to Yang Chen hopefully.
He did hapless desperation so well.
If Yang Chen didn't know better, she might believe Kavik's greatest desire in the world really was to redeem himself in her eyes. She sat down furiously, if such a thing were possible.
Chaisi gave her an almost sisterly head shake, the kind of warning a woman gave to her junior. Your funeral.
The four of them pushed their tiles back in once more for the shuffle.
Yang Chen chewed on her lip. They could still lose, even with the knowledge that Iwashi was cheating, even with the advantage he'd spotted them.
They built the pyramid again. She was sorely tempted to monitor Iwashi and catch the motion she'd missed earlier. But if she stared too intently at his hands or avoided them in excess, she might signal they were onto him.
A flashing sensation, like a needle's touch, there and gone.
She almost turned her head to chase it. What was that? A stack collapsed, and tiles spilled toward Iwashi's edge of the table, a miniature landslide.
Foul, Kavik called out. Your losses are doubled this round.
I'm aware of the penalty for upsetting the trove, Master Liu. Thank you,
Iwashi snapped. He looked flustered as he shook out his wrists. They restacked the tiles.
There it was again, the familiar pull, this time on Kavik's side, a broad smear instead of a dot.
Suddenly it dawned on her. Yang Chen glanced at her partner. Kavik's frown of concentration revealed nothing.
Have you two been able to enjoy the nightlife yet? Chaisi asked. I've been falling asleep at sundown, but Taku is a wonderful city for the young.
That kind of question would have normally come from their host.
Yes, Yang Chen said. We saw a shadow play, the lost slipper.
I didn't care for it, Kavik said without looking up.
Until now, he had assiduously stayed out of the conversation. His lack of rank, combined with his massive losses, made keeping his opinions to himself the fitting choice. The corner of Chaisi's mouth turned up in interest.
Oh? That's one of the few plays with any maturity and realism,
The poor man dies in the street, and the evil minister trips over the corpse, embarrassing himself in front of the king, Kavik said. Is that supposed to be a satisfying, ironic ending? I hate tales like that. Why is the humiliation of the strong considered a good enough trade for the lives of the weak? Iwashi still had no comment to give. Maybe he hadn't heard them at all. His teeth were exposed in rage at the state of his starting tiles. A fair draw isn't as much fun, is it? Young Chen thought. Such is the nature of the world, young Master Liu, Chai Si said. Barring a freak occurrence, power consolidates. It doesn't disperse. She took her last tile. So did Young Chen. That left Kavik as the last person to complete his starting hand. He picked up his tile and lifted his thumb to see the design underneath. I suppose that's why I've stuck with this game through ups and downs. Everyone starts on equal footing. Kavik used the piece he was holding to knock over the rest of his tiles in a sweeping cascade, as smoothly as if he were strumming a chord on a zither. Feast, he said. Flight of returning swallow moths. 10,000 base points, doubled for self-drawn, doubled for my first turn, then doubled once again on Zongdu Iwashi for his trove penalty. Chai Si whistled. The Zongdu of Taku trembled, mustered himself, and grinned. Congratulations on your luck finally arriving. Luck had nothing to do with it. For a brief instant, Kavik had frozen some of the tiles together, using his own sweat, and the ambient humidity in the room. Not enough to stick them like glue and leave evidence of what he'd done, but just enough to make Iwashi botch his sleight of hand. The same subtle waterbending technique let Kavik manipulate the pile as it was rebuilt by sticking the ivory surfaces to his frosted skin. Had she not been able to waterbend herself, Young Chen would have never noticed him arranging his own victory. They had to keep playing. Kavik was right. They had to keep their opponent at the table. They weren't out of the hole yet. Thank you for the lesson about flow, Zongdu Iwashi, he said. I think the currents are about to change. If Kavik's floundering act was good, his punch-me-in-the-face arrogance was masterful. Iwashi tightened up like a sea prune in vinegar. We'll see, he said, his once dripping flowery speech trimmed down to the bare minimum. Young Chen needed to do her part in annoying their host to the point of committing murder. She and her partner were a team, after all. Can you be a dear and fetch the waiter? She said to Iwashi. She smiled sweetly and pointed at his drink. I'd like one of those, with a slice of lemon. Iwashi unbuttoned the top of his collar and ran his finger around his neck.
Hot as the blasted Fire Nation in here, he complained.
That was Yang Chen's doing. Once she understood how slippery tiles were to Kavik's advantage, she'd increased the temperature in the room steadily. Even Chai Si dabbed at her temples with a kerchief. Perhaps another firebender could have caught the avatar in the act, but hey, it was good to be special sometimes. Her turn. She could push for a quick, certain win on this round, but at the expense of landing a knockout blow. While thinking about it, she took a sip from her drink. Her lips met solid ice. Kavik had frozen the contents of her cup.
Don't end, he was telling her.
He had something better up his sleeve. A bead of sweat on the back of her neck pulsed, goosing her skin and nearly making her yelp. She scowled at Kavik, but he pressed on her with waterbending again. Then, once more.
Give me a three tile.
Yang Chen palmed a three of mountains. Iwashi wasn't the only one who could perform sleight of hand. Rubbed some condensation from her drink on the back and flicked it under the table at Kavik. He wasn't ready. The panic in his eyes subsided, only once he realized she'd frozen the tile to his trousers. He squinted at her for taking the unnecessary risk.
Oh, would you two stop making eyes at each other and just play?
Iwashi snarled. Young Chen laid down her discard.
Apologies. This is a big hand, isn't it? If Leo wins with any double, he gets back everything we've bet so far and the points difference in gold ingots. Bin-Ur could have 8 wells instead of 4.
Or a spectacular grave-tidying festival of its own,
Chaisi helpfully suggested.
You made yours sound so nice.
The teasing had bored fully into Iwashi's head. He wavered over his discard before selecting a 5-leaf, the safest option according to the information available on the table. Even Yang Chen could sense his capitulation.
It almost pains me to do this, Kavik said.
Feast! Swords in the armory! 8,800! I know how many points it's worth!
Iwashi shouted. He was so frazzled, he leaned over and swept all the tiles back into the pool before Kavik could show off his winning combination. For all anyone knew, he could have been making up his claim to victory.
Again!
Iwashi, maybe we should stop, Chaisi said. A wise player knows when to quit.
We're not stopping in the middle of a rotation!
The Zhongdu of Zhangduri rubbed her forehead.
You said that 2 rotations ago.
The shame and embarrassment her peer should have been feeling was bouncing off him and striking her. Yang Chen looked at Kavik. There was always this risk, too, of becoming trapped in a vortex of money flowing back and forth to no end. That was why the signal they'd settled on with the rest of the team was one that could not be ignored.
Do I smell smoke?
Kavik said. He sniffed the air.
Does anyone else smell smoke?
Look, Yang Chen pointed out the window. Down by the docks, a thick column of black smoke rose from the largest wooden object in the waters.
The bliss eternal, now ablaze.
The game was officially over. So was the mission. And Yang Chen discovered that when it came to screaming, Iwashi was almost as good as she was. Anonymity. Yang Chen and Kavik left the meeting hall in solemn silence. It didn't feel right to celebrate when their host was so clearly devastated. But before they left, Kavik did make a point of taking Yang Chen's glider staff off Iwashi's wall, carefully closing the wings and presenting it back to her with his own 2 hands. And then, in another show of gallantry, he tried to give Chai Si back her pearl. She'd refused.
To the winner go the spoils. Avatar, hang on tight to your companion. A worthy partner comes by once in a generation.
In the street, Kavik offered Yang Chen his elbow, his face serenely happy. Their cover allowed the gesture, and so they linked arms under the setting sun. The lanterns went up for the city's night market. They'd already seen most of Taku's entertainments yesterday, so the only stop they made was to boo the ending of The Lost Slipper so loudly that the puppet handler quickly improvised an alternate outcome where the dead hero was revived by a kind passing doctor, and the evil minister dedicated his life and fortune to repenting. The audience clapped much harder than last night. Once they reached an alley, they split and broke for the safe house in separate directions. Yang Chen began her tail-throwing routine slowly, sticking with ordinary turns, but soon she picked up the pace, darting through shadows and leaping over fences. She felt the need to outdo Kavik, even though he couldn't see her. She hadn't been lying when she'd complimented his moves in Bin-Ur. Her glider justified the extra flourishes, the vaults, the leaps. She'd missed its balancing weight, the sense of security in her hands. When she approached the safe house, she twirled herself to the roof entrance with the wings collapsed in staff form for the sheer joy of the unnecessarily difficult feat. As she let herself in through the hatch, she heard Kavik entering on the ground floor. She ran down the stairs and met him in the hallway. He must have taken an athletic route home as well, because he was breathing as heavily as she was. They squared off and drank in each other's grins, their faces flushed and glowing, no words to bridge them. Yang Chen broke the stalemate. She threw her arm around Kavik's neck and yanked him into a headlock. "We did it!" she crowed, mussing his hair as hard as she could. You did it, you utter fool. I can't believe you pulled it off.
Kavik whooped and lifted her into the air, a skilled wrestler's counter.
Tell me you saw his face when you pointed out the boat. I'll cry if you say you missed it.
He spun her round and round while they laughed. A fall backward would have been ugly, but what did they care? Not only had the mission gone right for once, but they'd won their city enough money to put its troubles at bay for a good long while.
Young Chen was still squeezing Kavik in glee when the door opened again and Akudan walked through. He peered at them.
You need to grip him lower under the chin or he won't pass out,
he said to Young Chen.
Like this,
Tayugum said, appearing next. He leaped onto Akudan's back and snaked his arm affectionately around the bigger man's collar. Akudan kept a stern face up, but made sure to support his husband's weight while glaring at Kavik, presumably for touching the avatar.
I take it your end of the mission went well, Young Chen said.
Buttery smooth,
Tayugum said as he got down. Kavik snorted.
You took your sweet time. We finished within parameters.
Akudan pulled out a roll of notes. It would contain a copy of the ledgers Young Chen had instructed them to search for.
Not only did we have to impersonate the resupply crew, but we had to pick several locks, stay ahead of the roving maintenance shift, hide in a bulkhead, and make the arson look like an accident.
Now that Young Chen saw it, the two men's clothes were torn, stained, and a little sooty. They'd been through an ordeal.
Felt positively young again,
Tayugum said with a big grin.
You, on the other hand, just sat your lazy behind in a chair and played a game for a few hours. My grandmother could have performed your half of the mission.
Young Chen wanted to correct him after everything they'd been through at Sparrow Bones, but it was cute watching Kavik sputter in indignation.
Where's Jujinta? She asked.
Here. Jujinta shut the neglected door behind him with an accusing click.
I finished the tail sweep.
We weren't followed, to my knowledge. He looked around, and Young Chen could tell he was bothered by the jovial mood, how close each pair stood to each other.
Did everyone have fun? He asked. Was that a requirement I missed?
Hey, come on. Young Chen reached out and took Jujinta's hand while holding on to Kavik's. The former partners could barely stand the second-hand contact and tried to pull away, but she stood firm, an anchor with many chains.
We're a team, she reminded them.
The auras of sheer loathing the two boys had for each other clashed in the middle, like a storm front, with eddies of mild disdain from the older men toward Kavik thrown in for good measure.
But who better to ride the invisible swells than her? We put aside our differences and work together because...
Her attempt at a rallying speech faltered. She couldn't say that in contrast to the Zhongdus, they acted without self-interest, not with Kavik as part of the group. Free will wasn't the reason they'd all come together either. Akudan and Tayugum would have preferred their peaceful retirement in Janduri had they not been burned. We worked together without bringing emotions into it?
Jujinta's iron shell was really a boiling cauldron, threatening to spill over any moment.
Just quit complaining and work together, Young Chen said. I shouldn't have to play babysitter on top of everything else. At least with this group, she could be honest about her thoughts.
Kavik clapped slowly at her oratory prowess.
Words for the ages, he said. Truly.
Young Chen wasn't bothered by his sarcasm, but she wasn't the only person in the room this time. Suddenly, she had to switch from pulling Jujinta closer to pushing him away so he didn't gouge Kavik's eyes out with his bare hands for insulting the avatar. Akudan and Tayugum passed over the chance to show any maturity whatsoever and suggested areas below the waist to kick. Her hair got caught in the scuffle. As Young Chen tried to untangle herself from the clawing and scrabbling, she cast a prayer into the future.
May my successors keep less ridiculous company, she pleaded with any spirit that would listen.
You need to get along with Jujinta,
she said to Kavik on their return trip to her official lodgings. The stolen notes were tucked safely in her robes. Her staff rested firmly in hand. It was time for the Avatar and Master Liu to rest for the night. They passed a corner, strewn with lettuce leaves from a cart. Iwashi had been right about the city's littering problem.
I used to.
He shook his head and brushed the side of his nose, as if genuine affection were a stinging insect.
What do you care, anyway? I'm not part of the team. Did you forget I have to report all of this back to the White Lotus?
She'd assumed so before they'd embarked on the mission, and she'd remembered again on the way back to the safe house. But in between, there had been a genuine gap where Kavik was her companion only, and not the agent of another party trying to take advantage of the Avatar. Any lapse was her fault, but she found herself peeved at Kavik regardless, like he remembered the entire time.
You were the decoy, she reminded him coldly. And you performed your duty. Tell Mama I give you full marks. You're real Senior Lotus material.
Glad to be of service, he snapped. I'm always available when one of your plans nearly ruins an entire city.
Yang Chen grimaced, wondering how they'd flipped from basking in triumph to taking shots at each other. Kavik knew she was keeping the prize of the mission on her person. Would he go for the notes? There was no serious way he could overcome her in a face-to-face confrontation. But he could sponge the information with a trick if she wasn't careful. She'd never been spied upon with both her knowledge and consent before. The openness of the struggle made for a bizarre set of rails, forcing them both down a single path. Their best option was to keep cooperating, no matter how reluctantly. She quickened her pace. Instead of keeping up, Kavik followed a few steps behind, looking for all the world like the victim of a spat. As they came to the mansion of her official quarters and marched through the common area, the whispers of the servants were as loud to her ears as shifting sands. When they reached her room on the third floor, she'd had enough. She stepped through her door, laid her staff in the corner, and faced Kavik.
Look, she snapped. We're not children. Stop sulking, come inside, and we'll talk about this.
Yes, please, said a voice from deeper in the room. Let's.
Yang Chen turned slowly. The collision of her heart into the walls of her chest had left as quickly as it arrived. Whoever it was that snuck into her room, they'd missed their moment to attack. A raise of her fingers lit the lamps on the tables. The intruder, a water tribe man, sat in the chair Kavik had slept in, resting the side of his head on his fist. No introductions were necessary. While there wasn't much of a family resemblance in a physical sense, Yang Chen could see the connection as clear as day. Kavik's fake, smarmy grin, the mask he put on to infuriate, deceive, and project complete confidence in his lies, had been modeled entirely off this man's natural expression. Even his body language, the slouch of indifference, was already familiar to her. In every aspect of his mannerisms, as if doing so were some kind of good luck charm, Kavik had desperately tried to copy his older brother, Kalyan. But now, in the presence of the genuine article, he'd withered. Kavik's shoulders rounded in a preemptive flinch, a student caught cheating by his tutor. Kalyan gestured behind them.
You forgot to close the door.
In his haste, Kavik slammed it shut, sending a loud bang through the room. Kalyan snorted and shook his head, and in the span of those few moments, Yang Chen suddenly could imagine what it was like to live with such a person, to spend years in the presence of someone who held an invisible measuring stick over you, to carry the weight of their superiority.
The Avatar in the flesh, Kalyan said. What's the proper procedure here? Do I bow? Grovel? Ask for a blessing?
You stay where you are and don't move, Yang Chen said. She clenched her fist behind her back, winding up for one of the many ways she could take him down.
Easy now. I didn't come here to fight. I have a plan in place for if I don't walk out of here safely on my terms, so let's try to keep the peace, eh?
What are you doing here? Kavik asked, his voice small and hoarse.
I need to talk to your boss for a bit. Stay if you want. I don't care.
Kalyan turned to Yang Chen. The slight movement, coupled with his singular tunneling gaze, was all it took to dismiss Kavik, push him to the side, out of mind. The grown-ups would take it from here. She stilled any motion of her body toward the notes in her robes. She didn't know what he knew yet, and there was no need to give away a detailed confession in response to vague accusations.
Does Chai Si know you're here?
No,
Kalyan said.
And she doesn't know who Kavik is, so you can both rest easy on that front. I'm not a monster who would betray his own blood.
He leaned forward in her chair.
Consider this a courtesy call between two professionals in the same trade.
Two. Not three. Another slight against Kavik. Once, Yang Chen had commiserated with Kavik about the complex nature of older siblings, but in the span of a few words, she'd concluded that Kalyan and Jetson were nothing alike.
I know about your grudge against the Shang cities, Kalyan said. I know about your little adventure this afternoon, bankrupting Owashi through his favorite game. Good stuff. There's a certain flair to letting your enemy hang themselves.
He nodded appreciatively, as if the whole exercise had been run solely for his pleasure. Everyone could be relieved. The customer was happy. If Kalyan thought the Sparrow Bones game was the entire mission, then he'd missed the move on Iwashi's boat. Or he was simply using the same tactic as her, lingering within the realm of common knowledge until the other side gave away more than they had to.
So glad I measure up,
Yang Chen said with a slight courtier's bow. Kalyan scrunched his lips and shook his head. She'd presumed too much.
However, I wanted to warn you. Antics like that won't work on Chai Si. You need to back off her trail before someone gets hurt.
Like in Bin Er, Yang Chen said. Like Hun Shou was?
Exactly!
Kalyan's smile shone bright and pure, as if he'd nothing to do with those events.
Hun Shou, may he rest with the kindest spirits, created that mess because he stuck his nose where it didn't belong. There are plenty of fights you can pick as the Avatar. Let Chai Si win, and stick to marks like Iwashi and the Bin Er Shangs. The adults can handle running the world.
Kalyan gave more compliments than a Unarak, flew a different banner, but ultimately his tack was the same. Everyone wanted to write history, but there was only so much ink to go around.
I'm not rolling over for your boss, Yang Chen said.
His eyes narrowed.
You should. She may have more firebenders than the three you know about. The woman's good at keeping secrets.
Yang Chen sucked in her breath too quickly, and he noticed. You're bluffing, she said to cover herself. You don't really have a plan to get out of here. She took a step closer. An air spout into the ceiling would knock him out with the least amount of noise. The only difficulty would be avoiding permanent damage to his neck.
Before you attack me, why don't you take a look out the window?
Kalyan said.
I won't bolt. We both know I couldn't escape your clutches through bending alone.
Yang Chen grimaced. The lashings of flattery worked well to keep her off balance. She stepped carefully around Kalyan, watching him. He remained seated, true to his word.
Two blocks down, right side. The bench is by the sweet wine vendor.
She reached the window. The evening's neighborhood shop stands were busy setting up under the lantern lights. Steam wafted from dumpling carts, while noodle hawkers laid down their carrying poles and mixed fresh batches of sauce. Some of the food and drink sellers dragged stools and long tables into the street to give their patrons a place to rest. A small gathering had formed by a banner advertising a ginger-flavored concoction to ward off the heat, and as Yang Chen ran her eyes over the drinking customers, her first impulse was to expect Dapa providing overwatch. Threat plus distance would have equaled the hulking firebender staring back at her, ready to blow up the entire floor.
What she saw was so much worse.
"Isn't it annoying when an amateur tries to play the intelligence game?" Kalyan said behind her. "He probably fancies himself the hero of a play. The royal in disguise who walks unseen among his citizens. Must really get his juices flowing." Sitting on the bench, dressed in commoner's clothes, was Earth King Fei Shan. The most powerful man on the continent sipped his drink and cast his gaze around the street, unrecognized by the pedestrians flowing around him. Yang Chen swore openly and floridly.
"I know, right?" Kalyan said. "His Majesty isn't supposed to be here this early. He's been snooping around the city undercover, searching for signs of collaboration against him by the Shangs, the Zongdus, the Fire Lord, the Water Tribe Chief. Poor fella is so wrapped in the shroud of paranoia that he thinks everyone's against him, and so has to confirm every imagined piece of evidence himself."
Whoever started playing the game first won. The Earth King shared the same mindset as the Avatar, the two of them more alike than Yang Chen wanted to admit.
"I've got a man posted on Fei Shan right now," Kalyan said. "One who doesn't mind spilling royal blood. Do you think I'm bluffing about that?"
He might have been, but at this point, it didn't matter. The Earth King was too big a liability. If Fei Shan disappeared anonymously into the gutters of Taku, a hole would burn through the map, starting in Ba Sing Se. "Someone," Yang Chen begged into the void. "Anyone, please, just give me a break. For once."
"Sifu is on the lookout for trouble," Kalyan said, enjoying her distress. "If he catches us fighting, we both lose. What do you say to a truce? I know this mansion isn't your only base. I could easily root out your safe house in Taku and raise it to the ground along with the team you've probably got hidden inside."
He flipped his head to the side. "But it won't." His sheer arrogance was a weapon in itself. A few supremely confident words, and now she had to doubt her craft, re-examine how well she'd covered her trails. "And what would you want in return for this act of goodwill?"
"I want you to stop messing with my brother's head."
Kalyan leaned forward. The casualness and geniality he'd addressed her with, so like the joshing between Zongdus, drained away with the motion.
"What you're doing to him is no better than blackmail. You're holding a knife to his conscience, and I don't appreciate it when people threaten my family in any shape or form."
Yang Chen's eyes darted to Kovic, but he'd become unreadable, forged his features into determined blankness. She'd never seriously entertained the thought that he might crave her forgiveness. He'd always been working one end of a bargain or another, first for her, and then the White Lotus. She'd come to accept that. She needed to believe that. Because if Kovic was risking himself out of sheer guilt, then his brother was right, and she really was extorting him without end.
"I protected Kovic in every way that you didn't," Kalyan said. "I got him far away from Chaisi, out of danger, like an older brother should. Only for you to drag him straight back into the jaws of the beast. You're a hypocrite, Avatar. If you were worth anything, then your companions would follow you by choice, not because they owe you."
Yang Chen searched for a response to fling back, only to find her quiver empty, her tongue robbed. Kalyan rose from the chair and stretched, protected by an armor more impenetrable than any layer of elements. He sidled over to Kavik and threw an arm around his shoulder, giving Yangchen a side-by-side comparison of the two brothers. While both were handsome, Kavik's squarer jaw lent earnestness to his face, a tempering softness. Kalyan was all knives. Grip the wrong end, and you got what you deserved.
This fella here is the real reason I sought an audience with you tonight, Kalyan said to Yangchen, shaking his younger brother back and forth. If you have any decency whatsoever, you'll stop using him as a piece in your game.
Kavik stared at the floor, trembling. No shield could hold forever.
Wait until I pass Feishan and turn the corner before you or the Avatar move,
Kalyan whispered into his ear.
Tail's out there waiting for me. You remember Tail, right? You know how jumpy he can get. Like this.
Kalyan punched him in the stomach. Yangchen jolted in surprise. It took her far too long to process that the blow was fake, Kalyan's fist lagging behind his shoulder. But Kavik didn't even flinch. His lack of response could only have been the product of conditioning. Years of childhood games with familiar, uneven rules. I get to do what I want. For you to attempt the same means you lose. Kalyan disappeared down the hallway the opposite way Yangchen and Kavik had arrived. An outrageous act in itself. The lower floors were full of staff. They'd notice an intruder. She was almost tempted to call him back and offer help in escaping. Instead, she waited by the window and watched the Earth King, the only person whose reaction mattered right now. Defying all logic, Kalyan emerged in the street below, completely unimpeded. No one chased after him or raised their voice. He must have scouted her quarters better than she had, moved completely within people's blind spots. Kavik's brother had skills she could only dream of. He strolled by Feishan without attracting attention. Soon after he disappeared into the next block, a thin man, sitting behind the Earth King, got up, dropped some coins on the table to pay for his untouched drink, and followed. Both Kalyan and this tail person, whoever that was, had managed to get within arm's length of the ruler of the Earth Kingdom. An assassin's dream. Only then did Yangchen believe this visit had been a personal matter for Kalyan, hidden from his boss, because Chai Si might have taken that opportunity. Yangchen wheeled around. "We have to go after him," she said to Kavik. "He's got a big head start, but if we work together..."
"It's no use," Kavik said quietly. "He's gone. We'll never find him. Not unless he wants us to."
"They didn't have time for this. I have my staff now. I can follow him from the air. You fell for it."
"But he won't," Kavik shouted. "How many times do I have to say it? He is better than me. He has always been better than me. He always will be."
He rammed his fist into the wall. His knuckles met the good, solid wood with a crunch. He punched the wall again, harder, and a third time for good measure. Yangchen knocked him to the floor with a gust of air, too slow to protect him from himself. He curled up on his side, cradling his hand, holding the seed of his pain. She pulled the nearest water to her so hard the porcelain flower vase shattered in place. Dropping to her knees beside him, she tugged on his wrist. He fought her until the agony became too much to bear, and she wrested his injured hand free. His fingers were already a swollen mess. The misalignment in his knuckles struck her deeply. Earlier today, she'd watched him put on a masterful show of dexterity, and without immediate attention, he'd never be able to perform to that level again. The water glowed as she began to mend the wounds and seal the fractures. She wouldn't be able to stop halfway. If there had ever been a chance to tail Kalyan, it was gone now. As she healed Kavik, she had to consider the possibility that he'd hurt himself on purpose to let his brother get away. She didn't know what to believe, when not long before,
She'd risked an entire city's well-being for the chance to reclaim a small bit of her connection to Jitsun. There was no weakness as great as family.